In the middle, I think middle's good now.
Okay. All right, everybody. Hello. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Bianca Gutierrez, and I am a San Francisco native. I live on 20th in Valencia. I've got two beautiful boys. I'm an equity verified human, and I do have a project at 724 Valencia Street. I also have a cannabis marketing agency called Bianca Star Agency, and you know, we're just all trying to find our way here. And luckily, I've known Malcolm for some years and their entire family. So this is a beautiful moment for us. And I'm going to let Malcolm intro himself as well.
Right on. Actually, yeah, we grew up in this neighborhood.
That's right.
Not necessarily together, but adjacently.
Yep.
Right. And so my name is Malcolm. I'm born and raised in San Francisco. I have a baby that's going to turn one tomorrow. Yeah, his name's Noah, 421. You know, I was praying that he'd be born on 421 so I could just do stuff on 420. But in addition to that, I have another baby. It's called Mirage Medicinal. It was a Prop 215 delivery service that I started. I started it with my father. My father was a business owner, Alav HaShalom. My father passed away, but he's a business owner here in the Mission District. He owned a dentist, Mission Dental Health on 23rd and Mission for 30 years. He was also on the board of MAFCU, Mission Area Federal Credit Union, right? Back when it was on 16th and South Van Ness. And he was, just watching him be a good community member really influenced who I am today and like Absolutely. My philosophy on just community service and what it means to try to build generational wealth for San Franciscans. Hey, Absolutely. It's Nikesh.
Welcome.
No worries. We're holding it down.
Nikesh.
Okay. So,
let me speed up. I'm the moderator. So I'm going to claim the blue chair. There are no. So Nikesh, Bianca,
nice to meet you as well.
So thanks for coming. We were just doing some intros. I was mentioning that I have a project at 724 Valencia, equity verified, hostess of Carnival, 7 years running. I have a class at CCSF, Cannabis Extension Program, Build Your Brand Workshop. And that was me, and Malcolm was giving his intro, and then we'd love for you to be able to intro yourself as well.
Sick. Okay, cool. And my father and I started Mirage Medicinal back in the Prop 215 days, and it's how I ended up in the social equity program because we were doing quite a lot because we wanted, my plan was to get grandfathered in to the new recreational laws is back in 2014, right? And so we were going state to state, selling massive amounts of cannabis. And I ended up in prison in Texas and then in New York, and he ended up I ended up in Rikers Island, and he actually ended up in Rikers Island with me not too many months later. And that's when I found out that he was basically on death's door. He had a malignant heart murmur. And when they brought him to jail, they were like immediately brought him to the hospital, the jail hospital at Bellevue in New York, because he could just basically drop dead any moment. And I was like, what the hell is going on? You know what I mean? I thought it was completely nuts. And when I got out, we had about 2 months together. Then he just like passed away. It was super tough. And right at that moment, the activist push for the social equity app, social equity program with my sister, Nina Parks, she kind of was like, she pushed me. She's like, you got to tell your story. And since then, it's just been a whirlwind. I ended up through the social equity program being partnered up with MedMen, who just opened up on Union Street in Laguna in San Francisco. 1861.
Congratulations.
Union. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yep. It's been, 4 years in the making. And I couldn't feel more privileged to be in this situation. I feel a very heavy weight of being a role model. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nikesh Patel. I want to first and foremost apologize for being late. I was coming from 420 at Hippie Hill, and it took a little longer getting out.
That's a great reason.
Yeah, exactly. also, I want to say that I've heard your story before, and I think just hearing you tell it really underscores why the work that we're doing at the Office of Cannabis and the support of the city for an equity program is so important as we talk about cannabis policy, not just here, but across the state and ultimately across the country as more states come online. It's powerful to hear that. And thank you for sharing it. Really appreciate it. Just a little bit about myself. I am born and raised in San Francisco. I grew up in the Tenderloin on 670 Eddy Street. If any of you know that area, it's more famous for the Phoenix Hotel, now Chambers, across the street. I grew up in an SRO across the street from there. My parents managed that hotel from 81 to 2008 when they had it on a long-term lease. So the owner transferred ownership to the city, and the city then gave the lease to the Tenderloin Housing Clinic. My dad worked there for about a year. But this is all to say that living there is a large part of why I want to do the work that I do now. I took a little bit more of a traditional path after undergrad. I went to get my master's degree, then I went to law school. I always knew that I wanted to do something public service minded. Wasn't entirely sure what that was. Went to the DA's office in Santa Clara for a little bit, then found a way to get to San Francisco, which was always my hope. Was there for a couple of years, and I had the good fortune of being able to work on the policy team there. And that's where I saw that you can do work on the ground. You can also do work from a policy level and really impact people's lives on a larger scale. So at the time that I was at the DA's office, one of my colleagues, or the DA at the time, had this vision of proactively expunging cannabis convictions under Prop 64. What we realized is Prop 64 created a pathway for folks to have their records expunged, but it required them approaching the court, scheduling, hiring lawyers, and going through this very rigorous process that even lawyers have a tough time navigating. So the effort there was, let's do this proactively, let's expunge it proactively. So the DA teamed up with I think it was Code for San Francisco, Code for America, thank you, and proactively expunge those records. To me, that was a point where it's like, all right, this is government at its best. Around that same time, my colleague at the DA's office, the former director, Marissa Rodriguez, who I'm sure many of you are familiar with, she had been tapped to lead the Office of Cannabis. About 6 months later, I joined her, and I had been working for the last 2.5 years as an associate director of the Oversight Committee here in San Francisco, Cannabis Oversight Committee. That's where I know Nina quite well. She was the chair last year, and it's been a joy working with her. So I could go on and on, but I think that's sufficient, hopefully.
That is a wonderful intro. Thank you so much. I knew none of that,
so that's great.
All right, that leads us into our first question. And we're hoping that maybe both of you guys can touch on each of these, your perspective as a dispensary owner and also the Office of Cannabis. So what are your thoughts on how the city has supported the industry since Prop 64?
So I'll go for, I guess. My thoughts are that the Office of Cannabis has been an indispensable ally throughout negotiations with my business partners. I mean, this social equity program, essentially business is about leverage. Okay. That's what it is. You know, you get the best deal when you have the best leverage. I mean, aside from, you know, your negotiating prowess. And the social equity program created that, you know, through its, you know, 40% CEO, 51% requirements for, you know, creating these deals and the, you know, first crack at San Francisco's, you know, legendary cannabis scene, you know, that's been around, that was the pioneer in medicinal cannabis dispensaries, you know what I mean? So, and it was indispensable. So going through that process, I was, you know, it could have been really ugly, but it was great. Like line by line, you know, they redlined stuff, you know what I mean? And they said, you know, not for me, but to the people that I was negotiating with, you know, like, I don't know, you know, just doesn't really look like it's.
So they had your back through the process.
Yeah, they had my back.
Basically, the Office of Cannabis has to go through the contract and make sure that this is something that is agreeable.
I mean, when you think about that, that's incredible.
Right.
That is just nuts. You know, being that I went through the legal system, I was very, very acquainted with lawyers, but not with jargon.
Absolutely.
You know? And so, and any business owner, that you look at on the street. They're not lawyers. So they have, you know, it's just, it looks Byzantine. Honestly, it's like, looks like Chinese.
Absolutely.
So that was, so I got to say that was very, 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 very important.
That's great.
Malcolm, I really appreciate you saying that because that's something we really care a lot about at the Office of Cannabis is anytime we get an application from an equity applicant and we begin processing it, there's a permit analyst assigned to it immediately. And that permit analyst is working with that applicant from start to finish, really helping them understand what are their protections under Article 16 of the police code. Malcolm just mentioned a couple of those, right? So one is the 40% minimum requirement and CEO title. So that means at a minimum, an equity applicant has to own at least 40% of their business and be named the CEO. There's proportionate right language as well. So there's proportionate, they have an interest in, they have an interest in a proportionate interest in their right to profit sharing and management decisions as well. Taking one giant step back though, apart from the help at the local level within the Office of Cannabis and how we work closely with our applicants, because we think that's really important, I want to celebrate the fact that soon we will reach about 28 equity permits issued in San Francisco. When you think about what that number actually means. Yeah, and thank you. It's a milestone for us because in 2019, December of 2019, there were zero equity permits issued. If you look at where we've come from then to now, we're at 28. That means by the time that 28th permit is issued, approximately 23 equity-owned cannabis businesses will be open and running in San Francisco. These businesses didn't exist at the end of 2019. And not only do they exist, but they're operational and they represent this new segment of the cannabis industry in San Francisco. I think it's really important to emphasize that when we talk about cannabis here in San Francisco, there was the existing industry, there were the medical cannabis dispensaries, and when Prop 64 passed, the equity businesses joined that landscape. To answer your question about what the city did is we thought about there's an existing industry and there's this new industry. How do we ensure that both have a seat while there's room for equity first and foremost? And there's an entire infrastructure in place that gives equity applicants priority. Malcolm spoke to it. I'm happy to go on and on about that. But really, to answer your question succinctly, what has the city done? There are 23 equity-owned cannabis businesses that are online that weren't online in late 2019, and the majority of them opened during the pandemic, which is something that is a testament to the resiliency of the equity community and then also the design of the program, that even during tough times, it can still work.
Stupendous.
Yeah, I know. I, as an equity applicant, have felt very supported by the OOC. And so I'm thanking you personally for the experience.
But it's really the team. I just want to plug the team.
The team is awesome. And everybody.
No, it's just Nikesh over there going through every contract.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I am a lawyer by training, but I am not that good. My colleague, Jeremy Schwartz, is here. He's the legal techno wizard. So.
Oh, is Jeremy here?
You know, Jeremy. So
he's parking, you know. Okay.
He's actually, this is how much of a team we are. He's actually parking my car. So I was driving, I got out, he swapped in and he's looking for parking.
That's how the neighborhood, that's how we roll out here. So it's teamwork right on.
And I also want to give a shout out to John Pierce, who was the acting director for the last 7 months, who joined our office and 2 weeks in was put into that position and has steered us in the direction that we are right now. So big ups to John as well.
Big ups. Woo. 420. All right. So, okay. Let's see. This is our next question and it's kind of like a general question, but what's next for equity and SF?
That's pretty expansive. I think the social equity, social equity retail owners, social equity delivery owners, social equity in terms of like trying to create more equity within San Francisco, period. I think that would be housing, but that's not the part of this talk.
That's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. It's the hottest topic now. But that being said, I personally, I gotta say, I'm a little bit apprehensive, you know, because like 2019 was, you know, when the last comptroller report came out, right?
Right.
And that was pre-pandemic, and even during that report.
Malcolm, I've got thoughts about that report.
Let's do it. they were saying that 130 permits were the upper deck, right? And we're definitely not there. You just said it, but still we have, you know, pretty, we have a lot more applications in the pipeline. Right. And we had COVID hit. So, you know, being that we just opened a club, which is doing, you know, great, because the Cow Hollow neighborhood, by the way, is fantastic. That's, it's really more of a testament to that neighborhood than it is anything. But it's tough because the city's in a tough place, honestly. Right. So that's why I'm just a little bit concerned. How about you?
Yeah, I think when we think about what's next for equity, there are a couple of tiers. First, permitting. Right? Our office is prioritizing permitting. We're actually in the process of hiring 3 new permit analysts. And the priority will be to continue to move through our queue at an even faster clip than we have in the past. We know it takes a longer time. We know that's expensive. And one of the best ways to mitigate some of those concerns are to hire up and speed up the process as much as we can. That being said, there's a portion of the permitting process that's in our control. And then there's a portion that is in other city departments' control. It's true of any time you want to open up a business in San Francisco, you have to go through certain departments. For cannabis, we are the additional office. But the first part of the answer to your question is permitting. Continue to prioritize that. The second part is grants. Take the dollars that we're receiving from the state and get them out to our equity applicants in a way that is easy, it's accessible, and helps them address their financial needs. That's something we hear constantly, is that there is an imbalance in financial resources between our equity applicants and sometimes who their partners. And that, going back to what you said earlier, can create an imbalance in their negotiating powers. If we can help get the dollars that are being distributed at the state level, grant dollars, into our equity applicants' hands more quickly, then they can use it to help them get their businesses off the ground. To date, we have disbursed $5.5 million. That's in a little over a year since we created the equity grants program. There are about $2 million more in the pipeline, and we're continuing to refine our processes to get those dollars out even faster. It's not perfect, but we are working with the community, getting input, and trying to make it better. The last part of the answer to this question is thinking of additional ways to bring people who are our verified equity applicants into the cannabis industry. Not everyone wants to own a cannabis business, and not everyone will get to that point. But what we can do to ensure that they have an opportunity to enter the space is create additional access points. Shared manufacturing is something that we're very excited about. And for anyone who's not familiar with that concept, it's pretty simple. It's if you want to have a product that's created and put your brand on it, you don't have to go through the process of getting a manufacturing permit. You can team up with a manufacturer and expedite the process. I'm happy to speak to that a little bit more if anyone's interested in nuts and bolts. Another area that we're really interested in is workforce development. Understanding where in the community, in the cannabis community, where do people want to position themselves within the new cannabis dispensaries that are opening? That's one of the things that we're most excited about, is more equity businesses come online, it means more jobs. And that means that we have more touch points with operators to say, hey, where is your need? And then we go into the community and our verified equity applicants to say, what kind of jobs are you looking to do? And if there's a match, then there may be a way to create programs to help place people into those positions. And then, as you brought up, branding, marketing, other courses, other sort of supporting industries to not only cannabis businesses, but businesses more generally. If there's a way to create access points there, then that's what we want to know. One of our priorities moving forward is getting back into the community. The pandemic really took us offline. We haven't been able to engage with our applicants as much as we would like to in person. That's something we're going to do. We're going to find out what needs are and then try and create matches to the extent that's possible. Now, there is no cure-all to this. We are government. There are challenges that we face. We don't exist in a silo. We work with other city departments. And so this process can take time, but that is the direction, and we're really excited about what's next for equity.
Right on.
I'm really excited as well. I come across a lot of equity applicants who look to me. I'm a woman, I'm Latina, I'm actually in the process of getting my dispensary, knock on wood. But I often get asked the question, how do I, and it's just, it's hard for me to kind of point these people because of, it's not everybody who gets the opportunity. There's also other, places within equity that they should be able to kind of fit into. And there's just like so many. And I feel like I should be able to help them more. And I'm hoping that, you know, there's some more opportunities to kind of guide everybody into as well. Just because I don't have the answers as well, you know, but as an equity applicant, I'm also just trying to help other women in cannabis really succeed. And it'd be nice to have like another outlet that.
Yeah. I mean, there's two different things to that, right? There's the opportunity, like succeed is another different thing. You know what I mean? Like the equity program has given us an opportunity. And that's why I was raising my concern earlier about, you know, just the number of just to continuing to accept applications, because there's one thing about opportunity. There's another thing about actual outcome. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like in that report, they already said that like it could become, if there's too many, it could devalue. It was basically reducing the leverage that social equity applicants have. If the investors no longer see a value in pairing with us specifically. And so that's kind of like, maybe it's just food for thought for Nikesh, is just like something to think about, because the pandemic just kind of beat us all over the head. You know what I mean?
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I think, you know, with the controller's report, it was thoroughly executed, but it was written at a time where we had even less information than we have now. And so there's a certain amount of really valuable information and theoretical ideas that are important to take into consideration. But what we need now is more data. We need to understand how the businesses that are currently operating, how well they're doing. And if we reached a point where there's still room in the market to continue to see growth. And if that's the case, then that sort of addresses the question, right? But we need more information. That's first and foremost. And I think just to put things in the proper frame, prior to Prop 64, when you look at the number of cannabis dispensaries, so just dispensaries, not cultivators, not distributors, not manufacturers, you could look at the number of MCDs that were here in San Francisco, medical cannabis dispensaries, anywhere between 50 to 60 operating at a point in time. If you look at the number of medical cannabis dispensaries that are active today, as well as the number of equity businesses that have come online, that number is still below what the number of medical cannabis dispensaries that were operating prior to Prop 64. So that tells us, if you're just looking for a crude benchmark of what the market can handle, we haven't quite gotten to parity yet, but we're really interested to see what the market looks like and what returns look like once we do.
All right. I don't know how much more time we have. Is there somebody that can give me?
We got all the time in the world.
I'm happy to be here.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's funny because I ran here because I'm producing a big 420 event tonight at the Midway. And we've got Too Short and Burner and Babyface Ray and Andre Nicotina. And so I'm really, my whole thing in this cannabis thing is, when I got it verified, everyone's like, are you going to do a brand? I'm like, no, I'm going to stick to what I do, which is marketing. And there's a lane for me, right? So I'm basically trying to create my own lane without having to compete with a lot of people. That raises our next question about events. So you just came back from Hippie Hill,
yes,
right? And so what's the future of permitted cannabis events in San Francisco? I know we had Grasslands and you know, now Hippie Hill is a thing, and Carnival is going to be, you know, hopefully having their cannabis garden this year.
Jardín
de Hierba Buena, algo así, no sé. Yeah. But we are starting to see that happen, right? And me as an event planner, or, you know, I'm like looking online. I'm like, what do I need to get in order to be totally legitimized as an event planner in cannabis? And I know there's one at the state level, and I'm just curious about what you see as far as cannabis events in the Bay Area, in San Francisco specifically, and how equity can be at the forefront of that when these, you know, businesses are coming in. How do we make sure that we protect San Francisco in that way?
Yeah, short answer is we're still figuring it out. And part of that is because when the infrastructure, the regulatory infrastructure for cannabis, for permitting cannabis events was created, it was created at a time where there was about a year runway to go into a pilot program. What happened is the pandemic hit and it disrupted our ability to actually see the pilot program through. So the events that would have occurred last year didn't occur. And as a result, we are still trying to gather information. So the pilot program was actually extended through the end of this year. And so the unsatisfying but helpful answer here is that we are going to permit events and see what we can learn. And then there'll be an opportunity to better think through what worked, what didn't, how does this look legislatively? What I can say with confidence at this point is permitting cannabis events is incredibly challenging. It is time consuming. It takes a lot of our resources, and there's a lot on the line. And I say that to say that we'll see how today's went on the ground. It seemed like it went well, but when you talk about permitting an event in the city of San Francisco and that has a cannabis component, it typically involves 6-7 different departments, right? Mm-hmm. Just planning 420 Hippie Hill involved the Department of Public Health, the fire department, the police department, the park rangers, the park and recs, the Office of Cannabis. I think there were a couple of other departments. It's a very involved process. It took about 3 to 4 months to actually get to this point. And that's just on our side of it. If you are the event planner, I have a lot of respect for event planners. They have a lot of people to work with, and they have a lot of masters. So I think the future is, we'll figure it out, but it is very time consuming, and it is not for the faint of heart.
Absolutely. I know the guys that ran Hippie Hill, and it was incredible to see everything that they had to go through and to get to the point. And actually, our cannabis sales, if you're going to a cannabis event, are you bringing your own, you know, or is it really profitable at an event?
I think this year's no BYOW, right?
So the official stance was we were encouraging folks to purchase regulated product from the approved vendors on site. And the reason that was so important, there are many, but the main reasons were from a public health and safety standpoint, because that is lab tested, it's regulated product. And then also from a support your local dispensaries, these vendors have gone through the process of being here.
Very important.
There's equity product there. This is how you make the case that these events should be permitted, because they can help support the businesses that are going through the process of getting online. And it's also in the interest of public health and safety. So it's kind of a win-win, but that's where we were. And we're still trying to figure out exactly how it works. Now, you can all imagine that for 420, if you tell people you cannot bring your own product, well, how well do you think that would actually go?
Man, I'm glad you brought up the event thing, because, you know, one of the strong lineages of the Prop 215 days was seshes, right? And like these, I mean, Dennis Perone, I mean, the whole, that's really where it started, you know, being able to have people come together at these informal places and literally like trade cannabis. And that's what brought attention to the whole, for medicine. And that's what brought attention to the industry as a whole, I think on a nationwide level, you know? So I think San Francisco has an opportunity, you know, when you guys collect more data, get a little more staffed up, because like you said, it's pretty, you know, heavy lift to like kind of regulate these type of situations, but to have more of a freer, you know, like old school environment, you know, as long as it's like monitored and like tested product is, would be a really, really good thing.
All right. I have another final question, and this wasn't on our list, but it's nothing too crazy, but what do you believe that equity, how can we educate how can we just do a campaign about equity within the San Francisco to really educate, you know, just the normal person on what does this mean? Equity. I keep hearing about it. And I've always thought it would be amazing to kind of have like a marketing rollout plan somehow where we're educating, mm-hmm. we're doing billboards or something that's just kind of letting people know that this program does exist and why it's important to support equity folks within the industry.
That's tight. That's good.
Malcolm, if you don't mind.
So the equity program in San Francisco.
Social equity.
Is that what you mean? So basically there are six ways, right? Six. Yeah, you need three out of six check marks off of a box that will qualify you as an equity applicant. If you have three out of the six, you are equity. And I can name a few and maybe Malcolm can pick up, but if you're born in San Francisco, if you went to school here, if your family or you were affected by the war on drugs, if you live in an area where the medium income doesn't match
Yeah. So there's a few different ones. There's one, if you have been arrested for a cannabis offense in this jurisdiction or across the country, mm-hmm. you could demonstrate that you are a San Francisco resident either through your going to a school here for 5 years. Another box is, has your direct family member, parent been, or brother or sister been impacted by the war on cannabis and been arrested or incarcerated? There's the school to prison pipeline one, which I helped kind of like inform with Malia Cohen's office, which is like, which I ended up in going to Horace Mann. I ended up in juvenile hall for doing graffiti. And that's why I qualified for that box. I did about 150 hours over there folding clothes, which they closed down, right? Over there in Twin Peaks. Juvenile hall, they closed that recently, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Financial.
And then there's a financial aspect, like certain neighborhoods in San Francisco through data collected over decades.
Yeah. And I can speak a little bit to this as well. It's been
his job.
It's been pretty much hit on, but you guys were doing such a good job. I didn't want to step in. There's six criteria. It's all codified. And if you meet three of those six criteria, then you are what we would deem as a verified equity applicant. As it's been hit on here, these six criteria deal with your incarceration or family incarceration, housing insecurity, there's a basic asset threshold as well that you have to meet. So that's the minimum. And then from there, there's six criteria: housing insecurity, where you went to school, if you lived in an area that qualifies, if you have family that has been incarcerated for a cannabis offense, if you yourself have been incarcerated for a cannabis offense. So these were criteria that were formed off of the work of a task force that studied the issue of what should an equity program look like prior to the regulations actually being created in 2017, around that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem.
And so basically when a company comes into San Francisco, they have to pair up with a social equity applicant in order to open. And so that's the importance of the program. Yeah, it's great.
Oh, I got a question. I got an interesting question. So
can ask questions now?
Yeah.
So
I'm kind of usurping the order of things. Is that okay?
We are good. We've gone through most of our questions that we've kind of already set, but if you had a freestyle question.
I have a freestyle question because, it's very difficult we're in choppy waters right now because on one side we have, extraordinarily high taxes from the state level. San Francisco has been very good about taxes, actually, at the state level and at the grower level. I mean, growers are getting destroyed with super high taxes, which is what's resulting in the very expensive cannabis at your local retailer. At the same time, there hasn't been much enforcement, actually. I don't feel like, because I see, of underground people still going in, still going. And like, for me, I just like, being that, I put myself in the shoes of somebody that is trying to transition out of the underground market, right? And it's very tough for me, the disincentive for me to join the underground market is because I'll end up in San Quentin because I already have two cannabis felonies, right? I only have cannabis felonies. I was very assiduous about only accruing cannabis felonies. But that being said, I can't, mess up, right? I have a lot on my own line. My partners are relying on me and leases on building signed, and I have a dream that I want to dream and vision that I want to achieve. But I just don't, it's very tough. Like, for me, first of all, I can't compete with them, period. I can't. So like, there's this thing that there's the scales of justice, right? They have to balance, you know what I mean? And I'm just curious of like how you see enforcement coming into play. Now that I'm a stakeholder, through the social equity program, I am a legitimate businessman. And, I just would like to know.
Yeah, like you mentioned, there are micro factors and then there are macro factors. And here, one of the factors that is in our control is what is the local tax, right? And as Malcolm mentioned, the local tax has been suspended because of what's happening at the state level. That's part of the reason why. When you think about what's happening in the cannabis industry as a whole, there are a lot of macro factors at play right now. And if you look at what the historical trends have been, the last 5 years, it's been very up and down. And it has not been consistent. So there's a piece of this, which is what happened last year is not necessarily what's happening this year, and what will happen next year is not necessarily indicative of or indicated by what happened this past year or this current year. We know that there's going to be work with the tax structure at the state level. Governor Newsom has made that much clear. What that will ultimately look like, we're sort of waiting to see. But there is a lot of misinformation or misunderstanding around what the state tax structure looks like. I am not an expert on state tax structure, but I can tell you with confidence that there's three taxes that apply at the state level. There's a cultivation tax, there is a excise tax, and then there's a sales tax, right? And each of those taxes are remitted by different players within the supply chain. It's all very complicated. Even after an hour of me spending time with someone at CDFA, I was still like, I had a lot of questions. But the point in all this is there's that will likely look very different. And for those individuals who are looking to enter this space right now, I think the thing I can say is we are still understanding what cannabis looks like in different jurisdictions. It is still relatively early since Prop 64 passed. When you think about the fact that it passed in 2016, it took about a year and a half for both local jurisdictions and the state to get the regulatory framework in place. And then jurisdictions had the options of enacting a local recreational office, right? San Francisco did it, but many jurisdictions within California did not. So there are only a handful of jurisdictions within the state of California that have actually implemented an office to permit recreational businesses. So even that is early in itself. And then when you factor in the 2 years that the pandemic disrupted what the economy could look like, we are just even younger in figuring out what the cannabis infrastructure, cannabis space will look like, not just here in San Francisco, but across the state. So what I would say to anyone who's thinking about entering this space is talk to our office. We can tell you the different ways that you might be able to enter. Consider more than just a cannabis dispensary permit. Maybe there are other permits that might make sense for you. Talk to us and help us get a sense if there are other areas that you would like to enter the cannabis space, because this is the time where we're trying to gather feedback and figure out what those pathways might look like. And finally, what I would say to any of the operators that have taken this journey from the jump and for those who are thinking about it is, we applaud you and we recognize how challenging this is, but we also understand that it takes people to do things for the first time to then iterate and get it right over time.
Oh, yes. Doing things for the first time. Pioneers. That's what we are right here.
Right. It's history in the making.
Trailblazers. Trailblazers.
Absolutely. We're all kind of just, and it's so interesting because you were literally the first person who I knew was going to open a dispensary.
Really?
Yes, of course. And so I remember coming. Yeah, you were the first. And so Trailblazers for sure.
I got a question though. That's speaking on that. Actually, going off of that, because I was listening to my sister and Nicole Elliott go back and forth on KQED the other day.
I was too.
No, really? Oh, yeah. Good. Okay, cool. Yeah. Nicole said something super interesting. I just wanted to get your like vibe on it because it was actually very cool talking about pioneering. And it's like San Francisco is a export economy. Period. That's just it. Like, there's just so much weed here that we can't, you know, all just smoke it all ourselves. Mm-hmm. And also it's enjoyed by the rest of the planet, honestly, probably in Japan even. So like, what's your feeling on pioneering some kind of like a state to state type of thing? What is even the possibility in that, considering the current like legality of it at a federal level? Can we do some like stuff with like Oregon and Vegas and like Arizona, since we're like right next to each other?
You're tempting me to put on my lawyerly hat right now, and I'm not going to do that because I'll bore everyone.
Okay. I just said Nicole kind of like brought it up, so I was just wondering.
Well, and it makes sense that Nicole would bring it up because she's at the state level and they are actively having those conversations. You sort of hit it on its head. There are interstate commerce issues because federally this is still a schedule. It's classified as a Schedule I substance, so there's challenges there.
Oh yeah, right.
So the answer to that question is, I think your sister and Nicole still need to keep having it.
Right. Let's keep pushing for it, is what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
I'm saying they should keep talking about it.
But it's curious that you even said that because it's a state level type of thing. Because, right? Because Sacramento, basically, if Sacramento did something, they wouldn't catch as much flack as if some, you know, SF tried to do something.
I think you said something very interesting, right? Which is when we talk about supply, right? Macroforce, there's a lot of cannabis being produced in the state of California right now. One of the ways to relieve that is to have more dispensaries that can actually sell it. And when you have a majority of jurisdictions in California that have opted not to create a permitting framework to license cannabis dispensaries, and then you factor in the other notion that it takes time to build these businesses out, you just have not very many cannabis dispensaries. And so you have oversupply, you don't have that many outlets, and that really messes with the supply chain and the economics of cannabis right now. But like I said, we've seen the trends within the cannabis space look so different from year to year that I think part of this is seeing where it goes and sort of staying the course. Because like I said, what happened last year, it's going to look different than what happened.
Buckle your safety belts.
Well, I mean, you've been
as an owner and operator.
I feel anyone in the cannabis space has been strapped in for quite some time.
Exactly, strapped in. That's what it is.
So I was given the signal that I could take a question from the audience, and so we're gonna just, if anybody has a question, we're gonna take a question, and then we're gonna wrap it up and let everybody go back to their 420 festivities.
And Bianca, before we take the question, absolutely, I just want to say Jeremy Schwartz made it. Thank you, Jeremy, for being here.
Oh, Jeremy, thank you.
If any. Woo-hoo, Jeremy.
Okay, so I see two people's fingers, and I think we're going to start with you, and if we have time, we're going to get to you, okay? All right, so Brownie Mary in the house.
Wait, I don't know if this reads.
You can take this one.
Thank you. I'm David Goldman from the Brownie Mary Democratic Club, which is a cannabis policy club. And I'm also on the board of California Normal. And I want to recruit you to go to Sacramento on Tuesday, May 10th for Lobby Day. We're going to do a constituent lobby day because we have a whole bunch of legislation in Sacramento that addresses some of the issues presented. Taxes, assuming Governor Newsom doesn't come up with something sufficiently productive in lowering our taxes so that we can compete with the overwhelming illicit market, which we estimate is 2 to 4 times the size of the legal regulated market. We have employment protection bill that would do two things. It would no longer allow an employer to fire you just for the sake that you used cannabis away from work, assuming you were not impaired and assuming that you're not high on the job. It would also invalidate the use of testing for THC when you only test for the inactive metabolite rather than the active metabolite. When you smoke a joint, you have an active metabolite in your system, but as much as 6 weeks later, you could have an inactive metabolite, even if you never smoked since then. And we don't want people to be dinged for an inactive metabolite if they smoked on March 1st and they're still testing positive for that on April 15th, 6 weeks later. We also have a bill that would allow legal cultivators, once their medicine is tested, to sell directly from their farms, so to help the small growers. We also have a bill right now that would allow medical cannabis patients who see a doctor to not have the doctor arbitrarily remove them from pain medication because they're cannabis consumers. So there's a lot going on that we need help on in Sacramento. It really helps if you can come to Sacramento on May 10th, and I'll tell you how you can sign up. Go to canorml.org. That's C-A normal without the A at the end there. canorml.org to sign up for it. And it really makes a difference. Even though our legislators in San Francisco are cannabis friendly, they need to know it's a super priority. That, they get lots of requests for legislation, but if we get a lot of people there and really make it clear to our new assembly member, Matt Haney and Phil Ting and our state senator, Scott Wiener, that we need this to be a priority, that they need to sponsor these bills, not just support them, to give more credibility, absolutely, more gravitas to them, it would really help. Thank you.
By the way,
well, Nikesh was off the hook. That was not a question. That was a statement.
By the way, shout out to Normal, Texas is why I'm sitting right now. Otherwise, I'd still be in jail. So shout out to Normal in Texas.
Okay, I'm gonna see if we have a time for one more question. Okay, one more question, and then we're gonna wrap it up, and we're gonna give this gentleman the floor. Well, I guess you can come up if you'd like. Yeah, unless you want to project. Okay.
You know, San Francisco has been on the front line as far as on-site construction. And I know that there's been some introduction of some proposed regulations regarding having non-infused food, cannabis, in consumption areas and maybe in retail stores. I just wanted to know what the local position is with regard to having non-infused products in retail dispensaries and consumption areas, or whether. So, and getting even deeper to that, whether or not it's okay for having it in retail and consumption or retail or
So one of the things I've learned early on the job is if you don't know the answer to the question, don't answer it and ask someone who does. So I'm going to pivot this to my colleague. Jeremy, do you have a sense of how to answer that question? Or is this one where, you know, contact us and we will follow up for sure?
Shout out to Jeremy.
Jeremy, thank you for parking my car as well, man. Appreciate that.
What a guy. Teamwork.
And I think it's also, this is an industry of people. I just want to give a shout out. We have two new fathers up on the stage tonight.
Oh, is there? Yeah.
Congratulations.
Congrats, guys. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Congratulations to you as well.
And his birthday is tomorrow, 4/21.
Woo!
He's 1 year old.
He's gonna be 1 year old. Yep.
Wow. Well, I hope to get there.
You'll get there.
My baby girl is not sleeping well right now.
It'll happen.
Your baby will carry you there.
I just want to thank everybody for coming tonight. Our guests, Nikesh and Malcolm, thank you for joining. It's a pleasure to be here on the stage at Manny's. I've been watching everything develop over here, and the stage is definitely the stage to be on. So I'm really happy that I'm here. Thank you guys so much. Any last words on 420?
Smoke responsibly, stay hydrated, party your ass off, and smoke more tomorrow. Buy it legally.
There you go. The last part I was going to say, support your local cannabis dispensary, stay safe.
Yeah, buy legally, stay hydrate.
Thank you, Malcolm.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.